First, I want to thank the organizing committee for inviting me to be here today. I want to thank all of you for being here. And Mike just said, I'm a professor at Colorado State University. I've been there for coming on 30 years. And what I used to do research in, this was actually my passion for probably the better part of 10 years, was baby calf problems, especially things that related to the physiology of birth and the transition to extrauterine life, and that's what a little of what I'll share with you here. Then I did move to being more, trying to do stuff that's more field-based, and that's why we created the Integrated Livestock Management Program, which focuses graduate studies and research on field-level cattle problems, livestock production problems. So I have some choices to make. What I could show you right now is just a boatload of data and a whole bunch of graphs and tables and really fun numbers about physiology of baby calves, because that really is interesting, except that I don't really think it would help you very much. I could probably spend a little time and just say, hey, look, here's what you need to do. Trust me, because this is really the essence of what you need to do on your ranch. And you might believe me and you might not. What I will choose to do instead is to fill in the why, which I hope will be interesting to you and will show you why the things that you already know. You already know 90% of what I'm going to tell you. What I'm hoping to do is to crystallize for you why you should be more active, more consistent, and more frequently applying really simple nursing care things that help compromised baby calves. And if you will do that, I assure you, you will save more of those calves. So the first why. The first why is basically a matter of every single baby calf that you save that could have weaned at, say, 550 pounds. If that calf dies, the only way to make up the difference, because you've already put in all your input costs, is basically to increase weaning weight on the next 11 calves by 50 pounds. And if you're weaning 600-pound calves, then you better be increased 50 pounds on the next 12 calves, and so on and so forth. So, and why is that important? Well, that's important because, in fact, the majority of baby calf of calf death occurs in the very early postpartum period. This is not shocking. This isn't surprising. This is common to all mammals. This is true for dogs. This is true for horses. This is true for dairy animals. This is true for humans. The two most likely times you will die are right after delivery or when you get pretty old. The reasons why you would die would be, of course, varied. But the consistent trend is that there are about 50% of deaths will occur typically within the first 24 hours, about 70% within the first 3 days. Almost all of those deaths are attributable to physiologic problems. There are very few infectious diseases in cattle. There are few. They will kill calves at that stage of the game. Those particular numbers come from a really great publication from Dr. Bellows out of Miles City in 1987. But every survey that's ever done always shows the same consistent trend, which is that animals that will die pre-weaning are mostly going to die very, very early. Almost everything after that is potentially influenced by how well they do there, but doesn't get included in those numbers. And the reason for that is because the transition from living inside of a uterus to living on the outside of the uterus, as it turns out, is the single most major transition of physiologic function that an animal will ever make, literally until the time it dies. And then, of course, that's a major transition as well. Okay? And so it doesn't always work well. It's not always successful because a lot of complicated things are happening. I'd like to see if I could make that make sense to you at a level that you say, right, that's obvious. I knew this. Every single organ system in the animal is going to change as the animal exits the uterus. Some of those changes need to be made in the first minute to 2 minutes. Some of them extend as the organ systems adapt over the first 2 to 3 days, and then ultimately most of those changes have stopped by about 3 weeks of life. This includes the respiratory system. The calf has never breathed in its whole life. The cardiovascular system, the heart and vessels, because it's receiving blood from the placenta that's oxygenated, and there are shunts that change where the blood goes compared with what you and I do. In other words, adults, all right? Metabolic. The calf has for its entire existence been taking energy. It's in a catabolic state from the mom. And now all of a sudden, in about a few minutes, it has to all of a sudden start kicking energy out. That is a radical transition. That's unusual for most animals. Fluid balance, I'm going to talk about a little more. Calves come out of a swimming pool environment. For the first time in their entire existence, they need to completely, radically shift what they do with fluids in order to maintain perfusion of the tissues with the blood. Thermoregulation, the calf inside the uterus resides in a completely contained, very nice thermal environment that the mom takes care of it at maybe 100, 102, 102.5 degrees Fahrenheit. And it will be a little bit higher temperature than that because it's living inside of its little shell. And all of a sudden, it's exposed to whatever weather it has, and it better be able to generate some heat or it's going to die. Okay? Musculoskeletal. Calves do move in utero. Those of you who are of the female persuasion and have had the good luck to have children will know that the little baby moves inside there, but it's not the same as lifting a 60, 70, 80-pound body off the ground and moving around. It has never done this before in its life, and it has never used its neurologic function to sense its surroundings, to find a teat, to seek for it, and to do something. Every one of those has to change. It has to change, like, right now. If it doesn't do that, it's dead. Those of you who have witnessed the miracle of life in humans will know that that little baby, when it comes out, is blue. I mean, it's distressing almost. It's like, whoa, look how blue this little baby is. And you know that the very first thing, your heart stops while you're watching this little baby, and you say to yourself, breathe, darn it, breathe. You've got to breathe. And if it doesn't breathe, like right now, then really bad stuff happens next. Right? So that's what's going on with every single newborn calf. What I want to do is just walk you through a little process to give you some appreciation of the degree to which this is true and the degree to which every one of those organ system changes is interdependent with one another and why incredibly simple nursing care things are the number one attack plan for taking care of weak and compromised little baby calves. Okay? Let's look first at blood oxygenation. Calves come from a low-oxygen environment. They're getting the blood in the oxygen into their blood from the placental circulation, from the mom. So it's not like arterial blood of adults. And now it comes out into the real world, okay, outside the uterus, and all of a sudden it has to make its lungs work. The lungs have to expand. That's totally related then to how blood flows through the lungs. Dr. Neary was just talking with you about the pulmonary vessels. Blood flows as venous blood into the right side of the heart. From the right side of the heart, it ejects and goes through the pulmonary artery into the lungs. In the lungs, it gets oxygen. Then it goes through a pulmonary vein into the left side of the heart. And from the left side of the heart, it gets pumped to all the rest of the tissues in your body. That requires, or that idea is that it's getting the oxygen there, getting rid of the carbon dioxide. But it's never done this before. And because the lungs are not expanded in utero, there's almost no blood going through the lungs. Those vessels are small. And all the blood is actually shunting from the right side of the heart to the left side of the heart to go the rest of the circulation. When the calf is born, it has to take a big breath or a series of big breaths to expand the lungs, to drop pressure in the chest. That's what allows the blood to go from the right side of the heart through the lungs, then pick up oxygen, then go back to the left side. And it doesn't happen all at once. It happens in a process. And if it doesn't get oxygen, that process can't continue. And it can't deliver oxygen to the rest of the tissues, and therefore the animal will die. Physical and muscular activity is a critical part of this. As the calf moves its chest. It expands the lungs. It begins to actually change the pressures inside the thorax. So we've got this vicious cycle. If the calf doesn't have oxygen, then it doesn't have strength. If it doesn't have strength, then it can't move. If it can't move really well, then it can't expand its chest. Therefore, it doesn't get oxygen. So whether it's chicken or egg, the calf needs to be able to be strong and active and vibrant and start moving, or it's in really deep trouble. All right? That brings us to fluid volume. Calves are always born with less total blood volume than they really need to maintain really good blood pressures. Why? Because they have spent their entire existence in a swimming pool. Let me make this be relevant to you. I'll bet you almost everybody in this room has at some point in their life, say, spent a good half hour or maybe an hour in a swimming pool or a pond or whatever. What happens when you get out of the pond? I don't care what the temperature is outside. You are going to do three things. And I'm going to pretty much promise you this is true. One, you are going to dry off. Why? Because you're losing body heat like crazy. If it's 70 degrees outside, 80 degrees, you're still getting chilled. So you get a towel, you dry yourself off. That's obvious. The next thing you're going to do is something you don't usually think much about. In fact, you might come out of the swimming pool because you have to do this. What do you have to do? You have to pee. You have to go pee. Why do you have to pee? Because when you live in a swimming pool environment, there's pressure on the outside that makes the blood pressure change, so it drives your blood centrally, so the kidneys say, I have too much fluid. And so you make a whole bunch of urine. And so you run to the bathroom and you pee. And then you're going to do item number three. You're almost always going to say, where's the water? I need to drink water. That's a calf. When the calf comes out of the uterus, it needs fluid. It needs to be dried because it came out of this swimming pool environment. So let me talk about the third item, and you're going to see how connected these are. And that's the ability to generate body heat. There are three ways a calf can generate body heat. One is called non-shivering thermogenesis. The second is shivering thermogenesis. And the third is physical activity. And they sort of look like this. Non-shivering thermogenesis is a metabolic capability. Baby calves are born with about 2% of their body weight is what we call brown fat. It's called brown fat because it has a whole bunch of mitochondria in it that take the energy from the fat, and instead of converting them to energy to be used for running around, it converts it to heat. It's a process in physiology we call feudal cycling. For the mitochondria to operate, it needs to have oxygen. And so you need to be able to deliver blood to the fat in order to generate that heat. Calves that don't have oxygen in the blood, that have diminished amount, can't generate heat through this mechanism. Okay? They could use shivering thermogenesis. This is what you do when you're standing outside and whoever it is that was supposed to be picking you up because you're out in the field doing something is late. And you stand there and, you know, sooner or later you start shivering. Why do you shiver? Because it generates body heat. Calves that are hypoxemic don't shiver. So calves that don't breathe well aren't capable of generating heat through this mechanism. And the third big mechanism is physical activity. This is actually the most profound way to generate heat. If you doubt this, leave the room, go out into that parking lot, run around it three times, come back in here, and you will be doing something. You will be sweating because it generates a lot of body heat. Calves that have to try and get up generate a tremendous amount of body heat. This is simply the best way to generate heat. Has it ever intrigued you why the calves that tend to get frostbite in a really cold winter day typically are the calves that, say, have scours and are quiet and lie down and don't pull their feet under them? Because they're not generating body heat, they're not moving, they're not doing things, therefore they're subject to cold at a much greater level. All right? So that's generating heat. So this all boils down to a continuum of things that I wanted you to appreciate for what they are, which is totally interrelated processes. If you have decreased activity and lethargy for some reason, a weak or compromised calf, then you will have low blood oxygen. And if you have low blood oxygen, then you will have a weak or depressed calf, right? That's a vicious cycle. And on top of that, because you have low blood oxygen, you will have heat loss and low body temperature. And if you have heat loss and low body temperature, you will be inactive, therefore you won't breathe as well, therefore the lungs don't change, therefore you can't oxygenate the blood. And so you have this vicious cycle of bad things happening. Then you will delay the intake of colostrum. That will delay the intake of energy, protein, trace minerals, and, as everybody knows, immunoglobulin. The immunoglobulin is the least important to me in the first 3 days of life. We're not combating infectious agents this minute. What we are combating right now is the capability to maintain physiologic integrity and stay alive. It needs warmth. It needs fluid. And if the calf doesn't get up and nurse, it's in deep doo-doo. Okay? Decreased disease resistance is the result. Calves that lie down too much, calves that get chilled, calves that don't breathe, calves that don't move. So one of several things is going to happen. Either the calf is going to die now, or it's going to die a little bit later, or it's going to actually survive, and then it's going to get sick later. And that's why compromised calves always are loss leaders unless you do something. You can easily identify this in calves. You do not need blood gas instruments. You do not need fancy equipment. I love that stuff, but that's not what you need. You need the ability to look at the calf and say, is it lethargic? Is it inactive? Has it stood in a reasonable period of time? Is it suckling? Does it have a good suckle response? How long did it take to nurse, and what's its body temperature? I rarely run into a rancher or a beef producer, dairy producer of any kind that actually takes the time when they have a little baby calf that looks poorly and actually take a thermometer, put it in its butt, and say, how warm is this calf? Of all the measurements you could do, do that. Why? Because from what I just told you, calves that don't have normal body temperature need your help. And this is really simple to do. That's basically what we're looking at. There are research, you know, done on these. I used to do a lot of this, but this is one really nice. I did not do this study. This is out of the Netherlands. And what they assessed, they looked at the activity patterns of newborn baby calves. And those are, first, the ability when the calf is flat on the ground to put its head right, head righting. Then they looked for the time it took for the calf to move to its sternum, to sit up sort of like a dog. Then they looked at the time to attempt to stand, those struggles, and then the time to standing. Healthy calves should be able to do all those things in 3, 5, 20, and 60 minutes, respectively. These are easy things to measure. And what this particular project showed, the calves that took more than 15 minutes to get sternal, to be able to move up to that sort of righted position where it can start to stand, was 84% predictive of non-vitality. Those were the calves that, without intervention, will die. So you can monitor all of that. Here's the definition that I would use for a normal newborn calf. Normal newborn calf should be born from an uncomplicated vaginal delivery. My advice to you, if a calf is born with any degree of dystocia where it is not an uncomplicated vaginal delivery, it needs your help. It may look like it's okay, but there's something more going on. Physiologically, it is more challenged to adapt than a normal calf. Time to stand should be in less than an hour. It should receive good mothering from the dam. The reason we get more neonatal death loss from heifers is because heifers are not as capable and as trained to provide the kind of mothering the calf needs. So a good calf manager will provide that for it. Body temperature should not drop below 101, certainly not below 100. The calf will be born at about 104 Fahrenheit. In the first 20 minutes to half hour, it will drop to about 101. If it keeps going down below that, there's something wrong with that calf. So at a half hour, an hour of birth, after birth, if you put a rectal temperature probe into the calf and it is 100 or below, that calf needs your help. Active suckling in less than 2 hours, and you should be easily able to identify that it's attentive, responsive, and active. Okay? And that's normal calves at birth, even with those things, will all have a physiologic liability. Because they're coming from a low-oxygen environment, they're coming through a calving canal, there's a period of time where the umbilicus is cut off, they will absolutely be born with low oxygen and with ischemia, meaning poor perfusion of the tissues. They will be born with acidosis. They will be born with mild low oxygen levels, and they will be born with lactic acidosis. I've done literally hundreds of measurements of that to look at what happens next, and I mean, that's just very routine. That's normal. That's normally being born. Normally, a calf will then receive really good mothering attention. You see this based on cows that raise good calves. You see a lack of it from a heifer. There's a tremendous amount of maternal instinct in dams. We select for it, but it's also got a learned component. You will have seen this. You will have seen a heifer following a dystocia who turns to the calf, looks at it, and isn't quite sure what they're doing. Actually, you know this too. There's a thin line between mothering and aggression. And a heifer that doesn't quite know what to do for a calf that doesn't move, that doesn't make it see it the way it needs to see it, either rejects it or beats it up. You know this is true. You've seen this, right? So you need to be exquisitely attentive to what it takes to define a good mother. Good mamas after second calf or more, they take care of all those liabilities that the calf had. What do? They push it around, they nudge it, they lick it, they fluff up the hair coat, they dry it, they do what you do when you come out of the swimming pool. They make it respond. They ask something of the calf. And then when the calf gets up, they help it find the udder. And have you ever watched where the calf licks the cat, the cow licks the calf when it's looking for the teat? It licks it on the butt. Take the time sometime to take a little baby calf at about, an hour of birth and rub it on the butt right around the tail head. And what it will do is it'll put its head out and start putting its tongue out if it's a normal, physiologically normal calf. That's what the dam does. Good moms do this. If the mom doesn't do that and or the calf has a deeper liability, that's your job. You are there to supplement what the dam would do or to replace the dam if that's needed. What would cause problems with this adaptive period? The four biggies, this is defined both in human neonatal medicine as well as, of course, in all animal. The four biggies, dystocia, premature birth, some problem with the dam, or in utero growth problems. In cattle, the number one cause is dystocia. It's simply a numerical fact. We don't have that many premature births. In human medicine, this is a little different. In humans, we don't have much dystocia because we circumvent it, and those other three problems are much more common. But in cattle, those others are not common. Therefore, dystocia is the number one cause of compromised calves. It's a simple matter of how we do things, okay? The others, however, are operative. So if you have calves that are born larger than expected, that's an in utero growth problem. There was a problem with signaling between the mom and the, and it could be the same breeding as calves born normal size. That's what we call macrosomic babies. Watch macrosomic babies. They're always a little dumber than usual, and they're slow, and they don't get out of the starting gate. You can identify these things. All such calves need special attention. And you've seen graphs like this. This is actually from the CHAPA study because I really liked the pie chart, but I could have taken it from the National Survey, the 97 beef cattle study. I could have taken it from any of a number of other papers. Our cow population has relatively little dystocia. The heifer population, because of their size, has a greater amount of dystocia. And they have fewer mothering instincts, which is why compromised calves typically come from first-time dams. Okay? So the effects of dystocia are to increase the liability that the calf has as it adapts to extrauterine life, okay? And so then we have some things we can do about this. So here would be the things we could talk about management to decrease calf losses. We could now talk about ways to decrease dystocia. I'm not going to do that. We could talk about managing dystocia to decrease impact on the calves. I'm not going to do that either. But you should know that those are key features of good calf management. What we're going to talk about is how to identify abnormal calves and provide more care. And these are the things that I said you already know. I just want to give you sort of visual appraisal of the types of things that you should be prepared to do, and you should do them all. You should do them in synchrony. You should not do one and say, oh, yeah, that's okay, because you can really do better than that. We need to stimulate and enhance respiration and oxygenation of blood. We should help the calf maintain body temperature, and we should increase blood volume and provide energy to the calf. All right? So let's just go through those. Stimulating and enhancing respiration and oxygenation of the blood can be done in a bunch of ways. It starts immediately postpartum. So if you've delivered a calf by pulling, okay, then don't just put the calf to the side and then do something else. Oh, the calf looked like it was moving okay. Most calves move okay after birth because they have so much adrenaline in them that they're like punch drunk, okay? But as the adrenaline wears off, which takes place over about a 15 to 17 minute period of time, the calf gets quieter rather than more active. You should assume that will happen. You should therefore take the calf and put it in sternal recumbency. You should take the mucus out of the airway. You should vigorously rub the chest and the belly and the body. You should provide potentially positive pressure ventilation, and you should administer oxygen. The last two are the most variable. It depends on how bad the calf is. So you should position calves like this. The lungs are now vertical rather than horizontal. It helps the calf to breathe, and it does something else really important. It pisses the calf off. They don't really like this. They don't like being, but that's what the mom would do. A good mom would do that. That's what your job is. You put it in sternal recumbency, we call it, so it's lying on its chest. Then you stimulate it to breathe. Most people do that by tickling the nostrils with something like straw. I will advocate that you tickle the nostrils with an oxygen tube, and you dry it off. You get hair dryers from Kmart, and you take towels, and you put them in the washer-dryer after you've done one calf, so you've got fresh towels for the next calf. Oxygen administration is remarkably simple. We can take small tubes. This is one that we use as what we call a dog feeding tube. You put in the nose. Don't put it past the level of the eye. So you look at the distance between the nostril and the eye, and you put a little mark on it. That's where you put it. If you put it in all the way, it goes down the esophagus, and then you blow the calf's belly up. Okay, but if you just put it in the nose and then potentially tape it in if it's going to be there for a little while, and then you hook it to an oxygen container. Almost all ranchers I have ever worked with are very proud to have an oxyacetylene torch. You all have oxygen on the place. If you don't, this is an easy thing to acquire. And so the key then is to put it on so that it's flowing at an appropriate rate. Ideal would be to put this through a pressure regulator, a flow meter. If you don't have a flow meter, then you take the tube, you put it near your cheek, and if it makes your cheek feel a little cool, it's an appropriate amount. If it's flipping around like this, it's too much, okay? So, but a regulator is good because we only need a certain amount. The last step would be potentially to actually help inflate the calf's lungs, and there are a number of commercially available devices. That's the one that is most important if you're resuscitating a calf that's not breathing at all. It's probably a little less important if you see that the calf is actually working with you to breathe. If you do use one of these with a face mask, it's very important that you pinch the neck so you hold off the esophagus, or when you do this, you will pump the air through the esophagus and blow up the abomasum. which does not help anything at all. So you got to make sure it doesn't go down into the belly, that it goes into the lungs instead. The second thing is we're going to maintain body temperature, and there's two ways to do this. We're going to help the calves. The calves have to do this by generating heat, which we've already helped, and the other is we're going to help the calf, prevent the calf from losing too much heat. It loses heat through evaporation, conduction, and convection. So we want it on a dry surface. We want to be able to supplement it with heat, and we want to be able to provide supplemental heat. And there's a number of ways to do that. One way to provide heat is heaters and hot water bottles or a warming hut. Another way to provide heat, which is the best way to provide heat, is the same as you on a cold winter day. You come in and you make a hot drink. Because when you drink hot chocolate or something like that, or I suppose even some other type of hot drink, it warms you inside. Providing internal warmth is tremendously beneficial. And potentially calf jackets. If the calf's temperature is 100 or less, you have to provide a heat source. Otherwise, we do this through drying in shelter. So we provide a dry environment that's lime on the floor to make sure that the bottom layer, and then we cover that with straw. We can use hair dryers. We use towels. We increase the amount of thermal insulation the calf has at the same time that we're also making it move. We provide heat lamps. We can provide blankets. All of these things are possible, and it depends on which one and how bad and how you want to manage it. Here's another piece of research from the Netherlands. This is an incredible thing. And it just goes to the point I've been trying to make this whole time. In this particular project, they provided infrared heater for 24 hours postpartum to calves. And compared with the calves that they did not do that, they saw significant improvements in rectal temperature. This did not surprise you. However, the less of them do. It increases oxygen pressure in the blood. It increases tidal volume of breathing. It increases dynamic lung compliance and respiratory rate. How does it do that? Because if the calf is warmer, it's more active, and it has a greater ability to take care of itself. So why would heat help the calf with oxygenation? Because it also helps physiologically. And then the last thing, and then I'll stop after this, is to increase blood volume and provide energy. And the best way to do that typically is by providing colostrum. You look at colostrum as providing immunoglobulin. That is true. It also provides other immune active agents, optimum source of standard nutritional elements, a concentrated source of the micronutrients that it needs, and I will say most critically, fluid and warmth. Calves need colostrum within the first 1 to 2 hours after delivery. That's not bargainable. That must happen, okay? Because it's critical to the way they survive. So if it's a first-time dam, okay, then I'm going to milk the colostrum out of her. I am not going to take risks on whether she did or whether she did not successfully get the colostrum to the calf. I'm just going to take matters in my own hands and make sure that it happens. Okay? So here's just a reiteration. We want to stimulate and enhance respiration. We want to maintain body temperature. And we want to increase blood volume and provide energy. Those are the real key things. That's how we take care of those physiologic challenges that calves have. And I think... Oh, no, wait, I'm not supposed to take questions. So we'll take them in the bullpen session this evening. But I hope that was useful to you. That's pretty much what I had to present. I thank you for your attention.